Starwalker Studios presents The Obsidian Monolith, creating an original campaign for Numenera. Greetings, Numenarians, and welcome to the first episode of The Obsidian Monolith. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today's topic is preparing to prepare for an adventure. I'll share with you the things I think about when it's time to create a new campaign. So grab a pen, grab some paper, and get your creative juices going. It's time to create an adventure. So what is this show? This show was an idea I had because I've seen a lot of questions asked in the Numenera community from relatively new GMs wondering about how to create adventures, how to string adventures together into an overarching campaign, how to get PCs from the place where they're at in Adventure 1 to the place they need to be at to start Adventure 2. Where do you fall on the spectrum between a plotted adventure and a more sandbox adventure and things like that? And these are all really great questions, and they're all questions that everyone has when they start running their first games. And it occurred to me that maybe one of the best ways to go about trying to answer these questions would be to walk someone through the process of the creation of a campaign. So that's what I'm going to do. I have been running primarily published adventures for Numenera thus far. I've done that because I really wanted to get a good grasp of the setting and the game as Monty Cook envisions it, and I wanted to run adventures written by him and by people that work for him so that I could really kind of cement in my head the feel of the Ninth World and the feel of the game and how the game works and how adventures are structured and what kinds of things you do in adventures before I went off on my own. And this is actually not the way I usually do things. And in fact, I think other than Numenera, I've only run one published adventure before, and that was an adventure for Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition. It was the Return to Elemental Evil, and I actually only ran a few sessions of it. The group I was with kind of fell apart, and I never got to finish it. But other than that one experience, I've only run adventures of my own creation. I've never run published adventures until I started playing Numenera. And to be honest, I'm not even sure that I knew there was such a thing as published adventures, at least for the first year or two that I was role-playing. I think my first exposure to a published adventure was when a friend in high school had a dungeon magazine. And I was like, oh, wow, there's actually pre-made adventures for you. How interesting. But by that point, I already had my own game going. I already had my own world that I was building and my own stories that I was telling. And I would occasionally look at adventures, but it was always difficult to imagine how I would, you know, shoehorn this adventure into this story I was already telling. And it just always seemed like more work than it was worth. I got into Pathfinder for a little while recently, and come to think of it, I guess I've forgotten. I did start running I started running a couple of the Pathfinder adventure paths and had similar problems where the group just kind of couldn't keep getting together. So I had some experience there with published adventures. I really like the adventure paths for Pathfinder. I like the idea of it, of, you know, if you're a GM and you want to run a published adventure and you want to have an entire campaign instead of having to string together a bunch of unrelated adventures, I love the idea of having a pre-published campaign that you can run. I've had much more experience creating my own adventures than running published adventures, I guess is the point of all this. And I think I'm a much better GM when I'm running my own adventures. And I think a lot of the reasons for that are reasons that would translate to most, if not all, other GMs. And some of those reasons are because when you create something yourself, it's much more locked into your mind than when you read something someone else created. And I found when I'm running a published adventure that I'm having to stop a lot of times during gameplay and look things up because I don't remember something that the PCs are asking about, or I remember it, but I'm not sure I'm remembering it completely accurately. And I want to check because I don't want to screw up the adventure by telling them the wrong thing. And nothing is worse when you're running a published adventure than to get up to a point in the adventure and realize that you did something incorrectly earlier on. And now this thing that the adventure wants you to do now isn't going to work. And I've been in that position before, and it's really rough because you either have to retcon what you did before and say, oh, hey, remember when I told you about that one thing? Well, that's not right. It's actually like this. Or you have to figure out a way to change the adventure to fit kind of how you've changed things without even meaning to. So you don't have any of those problems with adventures you create yourself, because for one thing, more likely than not, you're going to remember those things. You're not going to have to look in your notes because it's something you wrote yourself. You're much more likely to remember it. And if you do change something in the middle of a game or do something different than you planned, it's a lot easier to kind of roll with it and mold the adventure to fit what's going on when it's something you created and you know inside and out than it is when it's something that someone else created. So in those ways, I think running your own adventure is actually easier once you've created it. Now, I know that there are some GMs out there that run pretty much completely on the fly, and they might have a few ideas going into a gaming session, but their games are much more sandbox, and they just present the setting to the PCs, and the PCs just do whatever they feel like, and the GM just comes up with things on the fly, completely improvisational, and just reacts to what the PCs are doing. And if you can do that, I think that's probably the best way to run a game, because as a player, one of the worst feelings to have is to feel boxed in by the story the GM is telling you, whether that's a published story or a story the GM came up with. And that's another thing with published adventures, is it seems more likely that you're going to get that boxed in feeling because the GM has this thing written on paper that he's trying to do. And that's just, that will ruin your experience as a player if you start to feel and see those walls around you and realize, well, I can't really do whatever I want. I have to follow this path because the GM wants me to go to this specific place and do this specific thing. And so if you can run a completely improvisational sandbox type adventure, your players are never going to feel that way because there are no walls, because you're making it up as you go. However, that is really difficult to do, and it's even more difficult to do well. At least for me, to run an adventure like that actually takes a lot more preparation and planning than to run a more plotted adventure, because I need to know every NPC in the area and what their names are and what they might think and what they might do and all these spots on the map, what's there, you know, what will happen if the PCs go there. Because personally, I'm just not that good at coming up with things on the fly. I can do okay for a while, but the more in a given gaming session, the more things I have to come up with on the fly, the less original each new idea is. And I think all of us, you know, have a limit as far as to how creative we can be in a certain amount of time, especially when you have to do it at the drop of a hat, and you, unless you're going to stop the game for 5 minutes to think about what's going to happen next, which again, you know, kind of destroys pacing and isn't something you want to do unless you have to. It's hard to do that. So if you are a GM that can do that and do that well, that's awesome. And maybe if you are that GM, let me know if you would be willing to come on GM Intrusions and talk about that, because I would love to talk to a GM that's good at that, and maybe you can give some pointers to help the rest of us kind of get to that level. But for a lot of us, or maybe I should say the rest of us, we're probably not going to be running a complete sandbox adventure. There's going to be some plot involved. And basically this distinction I'm making between a sandbox versus a plotted adventure, it's just, you know, do you as a GM going into the gaming session have some ideas of things that are going to happen, stories that you're going to try to draw the players into? So that would be more on the line of a plotted adventure. Or are you going into it just with, quote unquote, a map, whether it's a real map or not, a map in your head or on paper of this is what's around, this is what's going on, and you just let the PCs interact with that and let a story just unfold organically from what comes from that. So that would be on the sandbox side. So I think most of us, most adventures are going to be somewhere in the middle between those extremes. And I think really that's where you want to be. I've talked some with people on GM Intrusions and also just through email and on Google Plus and Twitter and on the Ninth World Hub about where do you stand? Do you prefer more sandbox adventure or more plotted adventure? And I think, you know, the thing that I see said so often that I also agree with is that, you know, a pure sandbox adventure may not work very well. It really depends on your players, how proactive they can be. It can get kind of boring or even feel kind of aimless if you don't have some kind of story. But also, you know, on the other side of the scale, if it's too plotted, then it feels railroaded and players feel like they can't make any real choices. And that's not any fun either. So I think for a lot of us, you know, we're shooting for somewhere in between. Even if you are pure sandbox, there are still going to be things in this podcast that will help you, because a lot of this is going to be, you know, creating your setting and creating characters and things like that, that even if you're a 100% sandbox GM, you're going to be doing those things too. And even the plotting stuff are things that you may do too, because if you're creating a sandbox, you're probably going to have some ideas for some plots that are around that the PCs can get involved with. You're just not necessarily going to try to steer them to particular ones. All right, so that's a little bit about why I'm making the show and how the show came to be. So basically, as far as the structure of the show and how this is going to work, is I am in the process of creating my own campaign completely from scratch. And I am creating this partly just to run with my own group, because like I said, when I run games, I create my own adventures. This is no different than all the other games I've run in the past where I created my own adventure. The only difference is A, I'm going to podcast about it and I'm going to share with you what I'm doing and why and how I'm doing it, so that hopefully you can learn from this. Not to say that I'm like a game mastering guru or anything like that, but you know, you can learn from watching someone else's process, and they don't have to be an expert for you to be able to learn from watching what they do and how they do it, because you can learn as much from seeing someone do something wrong as you can from seeing someone do something right. Because you can look not only at what they do, but you can look at the consequences of what they do and what comes out of it. And then you can come to your own conclusions as to whether you would do that the same way, or if maybe you would do it differently because maybe their results weren't results that you would want. So another part of this is I am hoping, I've got a playtest going right now of this campaign, and I am hoping to eventually have an actual play podcast of the campaign so that you can see the consequences. So not only can you listen to me as I talk about how I create the campaign, but then you can also listen as I run through the campaign with a group of players, and you can see what works, what doesn't work, how does it go, you know, how do I react to the curveballs that the players throw my way, that kind of thing. Regardless of whether or not the actual play part happens, I will still, in this podcast, be talking about my playtest that I've done, or playtests, because I'm going to do more than one, and talking about what happened and what I've learned from that and any changes I'm making to the campaign from that. So the other thing that's different about this campaign from others I've done is that I am not just creating this for myself. I'm also creating it for you. because my hope is not only can you learn from watching my process of creating the campaign, but if you want, you can take my campaign that I'm creating and you can run it for your group. Or you could take it and take ideas from it that you like and build your own campaign, you know, using some ideas I've come up with. Because of that, I'm trying very hard to stay away from areas of the ninth world, for instance, in the setting that are kind of Monty Cook Games playground. So I'm trying to stay out of as much as I can published areas, because I don't know when you're going to be, you know, listening to this podcast. You could be listening to this podcast years in the future when the world guide is out and other supplements are out that we don't even know about yet. And so I really, even if you are listening to this 5 years in the future, I would like for you to be able to still use this campaign for your own game if you want to. And so a really good way to help that happen is to not, you know, use things that Monty Cook Games are going to turn around and later develop more. So for instance, the city of Charmond, I love the city of Charmond, but you know, that's kind of part of the Monty Cook Games playground. And I think it's very likely that in the world guide, we're going to learn more about Charmond. And it would be a real shame if I did something in Charmond and then the world guide comes out and now that thing I did doesn't work because it conflicts with the world guide. And now you have to decide, do you want to do it the way I did it? Do you want to do it the way Monty Cook Games did it? Do you want to try to find some creative way to make them both work at the same time? So what I'm going to do is, in addition to creating an adventure, I'm going to be creating settings. And I think this is also good because that's part of creating an adventure. Because for all I know, you might be creating your own world, which is kind of what I did when I ran D&D, is I used Forgotten Realms as kind of a starting point, but then I kind of ran with it and did my own thing with it. And so for all I know, you're creating a completely different setting for Numenera. And so I want this to help you too. So as much as I can, I'm going to, instead of using a town like, say, Fasson, that we're told about in the core book, and you can read all about Fasson, and it's one of the places that they kind of develop for you a little bit. Instead of using that in my adventure, I'm going to use a town of my own creation. And so I'm going to show you how I create the town. And so if you look on your Numenera map, there are certain icons on the map that, depending on what map you're looking at, are either browned out or grayed out. They're not like the white icon that's labeled. And whether that's a town or what do they call it? Like a Numenera edifice or something. Those are things that Monty Cook Games has said they're not going to do anything with. So when I build a town, I'm either going to pick a spot on the map where there's nothing there, or I'm going to pick one of those grayed out or browned out icons for my town so that I know that Monty Cook Games, at least, will never come out with something that conflicts with that. And so you can take that town, and even if you don't run this adventure, you could still use that town for your own game if you wanted to, and the world guide isn't going to make it obsolete. So those are a couple ways that, for me, this is different from what I've done before. So I'm going to be learning here too. Anyway, that was all preamble about the podcast to get you on the same page with me as far as what I'm hoping to do with the podcast. And so I'm just going to be going through my process of how I make a campaign and taking you with me and kind of explaining as I go. You know, full disclosure, this campaign is not completely written yet. I've written the first few adventures for it. And right now, my group that I'm running is about halfway, well, not quite halfway, probably, through the very first adventure. So I am creating this as I go, which is also how I like to do it. I don't sit down as a GM and create months worth of adventure time ahead of where my group is at. When I sit down to a gaming session, I usually, obviously, I know what I have planned for that night. And I usually try to plan out maybe a session or two ahead of that. And that's always an estimate. You know, sometimes the players will tear through what I thought would take three sessions in one night. And sometimes the material I came up with that I thought would be one session will last for three or more sessions. You just never know. But I like to be prepared. So I usually try to prepare out at least a session or two ahead of what I need. But I don't like to go beyond that because you never know what the players are going to do. And you have to be nimble. You have to be agile and you have to be able to adjust to what the players are doing. So, of course, my first playtest group is going to have quite a bit of impact on how this campaign develops. And then as I have more playtest groups, it's going to lead to further tweaking of the campaign as we go. But again, I think you can learn a lot from seeing that process as well, too. So this will be probably a little bit different in some ways than what you're doing, because I am trying to make a campaign that will be playable by a lot of different groups through time, where you're probably not going to be doing that, although maybe you are. I don't know. Personally, I've never run a campaign more than once. I always want to do something new, but maybe, I don't know, maybe you run the same campaign with different groups at the same time, or you just run the same campaign over and over if you really like it. But anyway, I'm assuming that most of you are not in this position I'm in of trying to create a campaign that you can play with numerous different groups over and over. So I'll definitely let you know when I'm making considerations for that and say, hey, you know, you may not need to worry about this because it may not apply to you. So the first thing I do when I want to make a new campaign is I just have some preliminary questions that I ask myself. And I guess actually I'm getting a little ahead of myself. The first thing I do is brainstorm. And this works especially well with Numenera, even better than any other game I've ever run, is sit down with some paper or a whiteboard or whatever method you use, an open document on your computer, and just start just generating ideas. These can be ideas of weird things in the world, weird bits of technology, weird discoveries, weird locations, weird NPCs, just all kinds of weird stuff. And you know, a great source of inspiration for this is the Injecting the Weird Glimmer, which is literally just a glimmer full of tables of weird things. But definitely generate your own ideas in addition to looking through that for any that you like. Generate ideas of locations, either new locations ideas that you have of places you want to create, or locations that are already in the Ninth World that you especially like. Like, for instance, me, I really like the city of Charmond in Navarine. So that would be on my list. Ideas for NPCs. And this could be, I mean, this is brainstorming. So I guess maybe I should talk a little bit about brainstorming. Really, there's only one rule in brainstorming, and that's there are no bad ideas. When you're brainstorming, you are just writing down every idea you come with. You are not judging those ideas. That comes later. Like brainstorming, you just get as many ideas on that piece of paper as you can. And you don't say, oh, this is a dumb idea, I'm not going to write it down. Even if it's a dumb idea, write it down. Because the goal here is when you're done to have just a ton of ideas. And then you can go through those ideas and pick out the ones you really like. Ideas for creatures, whether it's new creatures you want to create or creatures that you've seen in the core book or the bestiary that you really like. Anything, any kind of ideas, just anything that comes to mind, write them down. You don't even have to worry about like categorizing them right now. You know, just have a huge list of all kinds of ideas. And then what you can do is when you start to think about what do I want this campaign to be, or what do I want this particular adventure in the campaign to be, is you can go to those lists of ideas and you can, you know, say, oh, this idea is really cool. And this idea is really cool. And that idea is really cool. And I'm going to take those three ideas and I'm going to mash them together and create this really bizarre thing. And now I'm going to take these other three ideas and mash those together and create this other bizarre thing. And then I'm going to base my adventure around that. So that's the first step for me, is brainstorming and just coming up with a lot of ideas. And I mean, most of those ideas are not going to be used, at least not for that particular adventure or not for that particular campaign. But I would recommend saving them unless you really come across one and you're like, this idea is terrible, I'm never going to use it. But I'd recommend saving the ones that you don't use that you think are decent ideas, because you're going to be creating more campaigns in the future. And it's always nice to have ideas to go from. So once I have all these ideas and I've done my brainstorming, I'm to the point where I want to start thinking about what is this campaign going to be? Which of these ideas am I going to use? You know, what are my goals? What am I trying to accomplish here? So I start out by asking myself some questions and I just start thinking about these. And, you know, this is creation is a process. I mean, it's different for everybody, but it's something that takes time. So don't, you know, you're not necessarily going to do this in one sitting. You know, some of these questions you might just want to let bounce around in the back of your head for a while until something comes to you that you really like. That's what I usually do. I usually will kind of think about something and then I'll just let it sit in my subconscious. And then occasionally here and there, I'll think about it again, but I don't really worry about it until I have an idea that just gets me super excited. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. That's perfect. And then I start developing that. So here are some questions that I ask myself. First of all, I ask, who are my players? So this may not be a question you can answer. It depends. If you're playing with people around a physical table that are friends of yours and you guys have role played together for a long time or whatever, then this is a question you can ask. Or even if it's people you're playing with on Google Plus, but you've played with them before and you know them, this is a question that you can ask. Who are your players? What kind of adventures do they like? I mean, every player is different. Every gaming group is different. Do you have a group of players where they really like solving puzzles and riddles and things like that? Do you have a group of players where they really like combat and they start to get bored if there's nothing to fight or there's no challenge to overcome? Do you have a group of players that like to interact with every single NPC, no matter how quote unquote unimportant they are? They want to role play every trade that they make with a merchant. They want to role play every time they order a drink from a barmaid. They want to role play every time they negotiate the price of a room with an innkeeper. Those kinds of things. What kind of adventures do they like? What kind of gameplay do they like? Do they like social stuff? Do they like combat? Do they like lots of magic? Do they like lots of problem solving? Things like that. Because one thing you want to do, if you can, if you know your players, is you want to create an adventure that they're going to like. Also, obviously, you want to create an adventure that you're going to enjoy running, but you want your players to have a good time. And as much as possible, you want to build an adventure that is going to appeal to your specific players if you know what they like. Also, what kind of characters do they like to play? Do you have certain players that you can almost guarantee they're going to play a glaive, or at least a character that's very much a frontline kind of fighter? Do you have certain characters that you can almost bet they're going to play a nano, or at the very least, they're going to play a character with one of the more out there foci that can do really interesting, crazy things? Do you have a player that you can almost bet is going to play a very roguish kind of jack that maybe is going to play a character that likes to pick pockets and likes to get into trouble and likes to kind of, you know, dance on the wrong side of the law kind of thing? Are you running a group of players that are going to play very heroic characters that are going to, you know, try to right wrongs and help people out? Or are you running for a group of players that are going to be villains and going to be robbing from people and killing people for no reason and doing the last thing you expect? You know, obviously, you know, most players don't always play the same thing, but a lot of players do kind of have certain preferences for the types of characters that they play. And so if you have this information about your players, you can also think about that when you start to think about your campaign. For instance, if you have a player that likes to play, like in D&D terms, like druid or ranger type characters, likes to play a character like may enjoy the controls beasts focus or the hunting focus in Numenera. You know, if you have a player that you know almost always plays those types of characters, that player is not going to be very happy in a campaign that takes place exclusively in a big city. Conversely, if you have a player that really likes playing roguish type characters and likes political intrigue and likes, you know, interacting with NPCs in like a city setting and like guilds and underground crime and stuff like that, then they're not going to be happy in a campaign that takes place completely out in the middle of nowhere with no cities in sight. So these are some things that you can also kind of think about when you start to create your campaign, because again, you want to create a campaign that your players are going to enjoy. What kind of characters do they like? And is there any way that you can kind of tailor the adventure to fit the kind of characters they like to play? Now, another part of this that you may want to do is think about, do you maybe want your players to make characters pretty early in the process? And this is actually what I kind of like to do. Like I like to come up with kind of overarching ideas about the campaign, so I can at least tell the players, you know, this is where in the world the campaign is going to take place. This is kind of the setup of the beginning of the campaign. This is kind of how I'm going to draw you into the adventure. And this is kind of the kind of campaign I'm thinking about, so that they can have some ideas. But then I like them to make those characters before I really do a whole lot, because then I can look at the characters they made and then I can know what's going to work well, what isn't going to work so well. So that's something to consider too, is maybe you want to have them make their characters pretty early in your process, so you can even better tailor the adventures to fit the characters that they're making, and so that each character is challenged and each character gets to do what they're good at. Also, when thinking about your players, is there anything that's going to be off limits? So for instance, do you have maybe some younger players that, you know, certain mature themes are going to be off limits? Like if you're playing with some children in your group, obviously there are certain places you're not going to be able to go as a game master. Are there players that maybe have certain sensitivities or triggers that you want to be aware of and certain things you want to avoid? Again, this is really only something you can know if you know your players. But if you don't know your players, it's also something to think about, because if you're playing with a group of strangers on Google Plus or something, you know, you want to be careful, because there are certain things that will offend people or make people uncomfortable. And until you know your players and you know what those things are for them, you probably want to err on the side of caution, because you don't want to alienate your players or make them uncomfortable, because they won't come back. So the next thing after I think about my players is I think about what kind of story do I want to tell? Are there any themes that I want to explore? Like, for instance, do I want to tell a story about right and wrong? Do I want like a kind of a black and white morality? Or do I want to tell a story that looks more at the gray in between? A story where right and wrong isn't so black and white, where good people are doing bad things for good reasons, or bad people are doing good things for bad reasons, or things like that. There are a lot of really interesting themes that you can explore in Numenera. Are there any parts of the world I want to explore and develop? You know, when I was reading through the geography chapter of the Numenera core book, were there certain areas that I thought were really cool that I would like to start my adventure in or have my adventure get to at some point? Are there any aspects of the history of the world, such as it's known, that I want to bring to light? Any mysteries in the setting that I want to explore? So these kinds of things can tell you or give you some ideas of what you want to do with your story. Because again, you want this to be something you're going to enjoy. You'll tell a much better story if, you know, the more into it you are, the better it will be for your players. So definitely look for some things that really excite you. And if you're really, you know, if you're at square one and you've got no ideas, I would really recommend pick up your Numenera core book, read through the geography chapter, read through the chapters about the setting and realizing the ninth world, and have a notebook handy. And as you're reading through, just jot down anything that you think sounds kind of cool and write the page number. And then later you can go back and decide which of these things you want to pull into your game. So some areas to look at in the Numenera core book for some inspiration is you could check out chapter 1 on page 12, Welcome to the Ninth World, just for the basic intro. The setting, part 4, starting on page 129, that's your geography chapters. You got chapter 10, Living in the Ninth World, chapter 11, The Steadfast, chapter 12, The Beyond, chapter 13, Beyond the Beyond, and chapter 14, Organizations. Those are all really good chapters to read through for ideas. And one thing really awesome about the Numenera book is there are a lot of adventure seeds in there and a lot of rumors and things like that. So anything like that, that when you're reading, it kind of sparks something inside of you, jot it down and write down the page number. Some other chapters that would be good to look at is chapter 23 on page 354, Realizing the Ninth World, has some really good things in it. Also, probably look through chapter 22 on page 340, Building a Story. That's just going to have some great advice for you about a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, you know, building a good story. So yeah, so after you've done that and you have this list of cool things from the setting or from the book that you found or ideas that you've had, then you go through that and you start putting ideas together and decide, where do I want this story to take place? What are some things that I'm interested in happening? What are some stories I'm interested in telling? And then the next thing I think about is, what type or types of gameplay do I want to feature in the campaign? So do I want lots of combat? Do I want lots of social interactions? Do I want intrigue, politics? Do I want there to be mysteries for the PCs to solve? Are the PCs working for someone, or are they independent, just doing whatever they feel like doing? Where do I want to fall on the sandbox versus plot-driven spectrum? Do I want to have certain adventures or certain parts of adventures that are just open sandbox and maybe other parts that are more plot-driven? Personally, I try to go for a balance of all these things, partly because I'm easily bored, and if I did a whole campaign that was just lots of combat or lots of politics or whatever, I would be bored to tears. And I like a lot of variety, so I try to bring as many things into my games as I can. And also, again, like I said, with this particular campaign, I'm hoping to make something that will appeal to a diverse number of players, as many players as I can, so that hopefully when you're listening to this, it's something that's relevant to you. And even if you don't play the campaign whole cloth, you can take elements of it and use it in your own game. So I want to bring in as many of these things as I can. I want to have as much variety as far as the gameplay as I can. And I want to appeal to as many different types of players and as many different types of characters as I can. So the answers to all these questions help to guide me in the next step of the process, which is beginning to lay the foundation of the campaign. So within that, there are three main areas to think about. The first is setting. Where is your story going to take place? Will the story be told in one area or maybe even one town? Or will it go from place to place to place? If it goes from place to place, what are some places I would like to visit? Character. What types of characters will work well in this story? Are there certain types of characters I'd like to encourage or discourage, or even certain types of characters I don't want to allow? Now, this is something that I don't think is as relevant in Numenera as in other games I've played, like, for instance, Pathfinder or D&D, where you had to worry about, oh, you know, I definitely want to have a cleric in the party, or, oh, I definitely want to have a paladin in the party, or, oh, I definitely don't want a paladin in the party, or, oh, there's got to be a wizard, or this thing will never happen. That's less of an issue in this game. Characters are much more flexible. The types are much less relevant. You don't have to have a glaive, a jack, and a nano in your party. You can have a party of all jacks. You can have a party of all glaives. You know, I would argue the foci they pick is more relative than the more relevant than the type that they pick. But even then, unless you're telling a very, very specialized story, you're probably not going to be in a position where you're going to say someone has to play focus X or it's not going to work. And if you are in that position, unless you have a player that has already said they want to play Focus X, or you're pretty sure that a player will want to play Focus X, I'd really rethink what you're doing. Because part of what's so awesome about Numenera is the freedom you have when you make a character and all of the options that you have, especially if you use the character options book. So to tell the players, hey, one of you has to play this particular focus, I don't think it's something you want to do unless, like I said, a player already wants to play that focus anyway. And then I think about plot. Again, what is the story I want to tell? What is the arc of the story I want to tell. And the arc is the changes that happen through the story. Like, the story begins in point A with this certain situation, and then through the course of the story, things change. That's the arc. And your plot, your story is going to have an arc. Your setting's going to have an arc as the things the players do affect the setting. And each character is going to have an arc, or probably multiple arcs. And that's something to think about. Now your players are going to give you arcs for their characters, hopefully. And if they don't, you can work with them to come up with that. But you as a GM will probably develop some arcs for them as well, too. And so that brings me to subplots. Do you have any ideas for subplots? And this is something I'm not sure exactly where I got this idea from. I'm guessing it's probably from the old White Wolf books, probably from Vampire or Changeling, because I ran those games a lot. And that's the idea of subplots and throwing in as many as you can without things getting ridiculous, right? Because if you think about like a lot of TV shows, like Star Trek The Next Generation is a perfect example of this. Almost every episode, if not every episode, there's two stories being told. And they call it the A story and the B story. And so the A story is like the big, like kind of what the episode's really about. But then the B story will be something involving maybe one of the characters or a couple of the characters that is a separate kind of story that's not as big as the main story, but it's still there, and it gives them, you know, ways that they can cut from story A scene to story B scene and back to story A scene. And it just, for instance, on Star Trek, it makes it feel like you're on a real starship where people are living real lives. If every episode was just an A story, it would feel very contrived and it would feel very unrealistic, because everything that's happening on this ship with 1,000+ people involves this one thing. So by having this B story where something else is going on with the characters, like maybe I should have probably thought of an example, but I didn't realize when I went into this that I was going to be talking about Star Trek. But for instance, you might have an episode about the Enterprise encountering these hostile aliens, and they have to deal with these hostile aliens. But in the same episode, you might have a B story of where Data is trying to train his cat not to jump on the bed or something, right? And the cat jumping on the bed has nothing to do with the A story with the aliens, but it gives more variety to the episode, and it helps to remind us that these characters have lives above and beyond the job that they do on the ship, and that they're multidimensional people. So you want to do the same thing in your games. You know, you're going to have, assuming you have a plot to your campaign, you're going to have like your arc for the campaign, and you're, you know, maybe you do the cliche, oh, they must take the magical thing and destroy it in the volcano to stop the ancient evil or whatever. So that's like your A story, right? But if that's all there is, it's going to be a pretty boring story. So you want to have as many subplots as you can. And you want to be sure when you create subplots that you're creating them for every player character and giving them all equal love, because sometimes you'll have a situation where maybe one or two players, just for some reason, they make these characters that just really get you jazzed, and you just have all these ideas about this one character and things you could do with this one character's backstory or whatever. And then you'll have another player character where you've got nothing. And if you just kind of do what comes easy, you'll be doing all this stuff with player A and, you know, their long lost sister comes to town and all this stuff, and player B, you're just ignoring them. And so you don't want to do that. So if you have that situation, you want to talk to player B and say, look, you know, let's work a little bit on your backstory and let's come up with some interesting things about your character above and beyond what you're doing in this group right now. Or if maybe the player is unwilling or unable to do that, as a GM, come up with some surprises for that character. Come up with some things that can happen to that character to make the character more interesting to you and to the player. So these subplots really help broaden your story. And kind of what I used to go for, and I still do, is I like to try to throw in a subplot every gaming session, at least one. I like to make sure that there are subplots involving each of the characters, And I love it if I can have enough subplots going at any given time that sometimes the players, A, might wonder what the main plot is, or B, you know, they have to make decisions because they don't have enough time to do everything. And that's something really important in Numenera is in the ninth world, there's mysteries all around you and the players are never going to have time to solve every single one. So by throwing these subplots at them and getting it to the point where they have to decide, okay, we're going to engage with this subplot and this subplot, but this other one, we're going to have to let go because we can't do everything. That makes the world feel much more real, and it makes those walls, because there's always walls around the PCs. The trick is to make them invisible, right? Or to make them unnoticeable. And by having all these subplots and having more than they can actually deal with, it makes those walls more transparent. It makes them more unnoticeable because the PCs feel like, well, we could just stop doing this thing we're doing and go do this other thing at any time. And they could. And it's that freedom, I think, that makes so many of us, that draws so many of us to these kinds of games, because you don't have that kind of freedom if you're playing an RPG on the internet, or I mean like a computer role-playing game or an MMO or something like that. Like, your options are much more limited than in these kinds of games. And I know for myself, that's one of the things I love about tabletop RPGs is, as long as I have a good GM that isn't going to try to railroad me through whatever, I have this freedom where I could just go off the rails and do something totally crazy and unexpected, and the GM's just going to roll with it, and it'll be a lot of fun. And you can't do that in a lot of other types of games that you play. All right, so I think that's a good start for the podcast. I've given you some questions to think about to start thinking about what you want your campaign to be and what you want your campaign to do for you and for your players. So on the next episode, I'm going to start through this process for my own campaign that I'm developing, and I'm going to start to answer these questions for myself. So this episode was kind of all theory. So next episode, you'll get to see these things begin to be put into practice. Well, that's going to wrap up Game Master's Journey. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Please go find me on Google+. You can just search for Lex Starwalker. And please join the Game Master's Journey Google+ community. You can find a link to it on our website at starwalkerstudios.com in the Game Master's Journey show notes. And please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please call the voicemail 626-LEX-GMI-1. And again, please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this show. You can find helpful links to our Google+ community, and you can also find our other podcasts that we put out. So once again, I thank you for joining me on my journey as a game master, and I look forward to coming back next week. So until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Tranceboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.